com. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. College affordability is a huge topic these days. President Obama mentioned it in his State of the Union speech. Governor Maggie Hassan raised it in her budget address. And there seems to be near universal agreement now that something has to be done to reduce the sky-high cost of higher education. And that's especially the case in the Granite State, where our public colleges and universities are among the nation's most expensive and where students graduate with more debt than anywhere else. It's a struggle our guest today knows all too well. We're talking with Ed McKay, Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire, who steps down at the end of this week. Before his appointment in 2009, McKay spent many years as the system's chief financial guru. In that role, he worked to increase financial aid and create new scholarship programs. Then as chancellor, he led the system through unprecedented budget cuts, where state funding was reduced by half, the largest such cut in the country. McKay's successor may see easier times with Governor Hassan's promise to restore most of that funding. Still, the budget's a document in progress, and how much higher education gets in the end is anyone's guess, given all the other demands for state funding, from mental health to infrastructure. Today in The Exchange, Chancellor Ed McKay joins us, and we'll look back at the many changes he's seen and what challenges may await his replacement. Let's hear from you two this hour. What questions, comments, kudos, or critiques do you have about public higher education in the Granite State? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Chancellor McKay, it's really nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Laura. It's good to be here on another New Hampshire morning.
And with just a couple of days left to go to your retirement, and congratulations on that. You know, you've been with the university system, as I said, Chancellor McKay, for more than 35 years. You must have seen a lot of changes over that time. What did the university system look like 3.5 decades ago when you first got started there?
Well, I came to Keene State College, which was my first position in the university system, in 1976, which was only 13 years after the founding of the university system. If you look back at the university system when it was founded, Keene and Plymouth were teacher colleges under the Department of Ed. Granite State College didn't exist. In the early 70s, it was a creation called the School of Continuing Studies. And UNH essentially was an institution very much focused on teaching and had very limited research capacity. So when I came to Keene then in 76, I found a wonderful community that really was aspiring to grow into what is now a public liberal arts college. And if I look over the last 37 years, it's true that each of our institutions has found its own pathway to be distinctive and to really embrace a unique mission. Keene is our public liberal arts college. Plymouth State University is a comprehensive regional university. UNH, of course, as everyone knows, is a land-grant, sea-grant, space-grant university with national and international prestige. And Granite State College is really committed to serving adult learners for wherever they may reside. In fact, 20% of the population now is recent high school graduates. And Granite State College is a remarkable success story in terms of delivery of educational programs at a low-cost manner to residents across the state.
And UNH Manchester serving another role for students who can't afford to live on campus, are maybe a little older and are working but want that university education. When did UNHM, as they call it, come about?
Well, it has at its roots what was really Merrimack Valley College, which was a separate entity back in the 80s. But in the mid-1990s is when the transition really was accomplished. We moved from Hackett Hill downtown. And that's when I think it really became a full-fledged college of the university. And as you correctly described, serves the commuting population from the greater Manchester area, where a tremendous number of our residents live. In fact, I remember one statistic that approximately 50% of the high school graduates in state live within 25 miles of Manchester. So it is possible for a large proportion of New Hampshire residents to attend an institution such as UNH Manchester.
So big changes over 35 years, Chancellor McKay, both in terms of the structures themselves, in terms of their missions, what they're all about, who they serve. What other changes have you seen, Chancellor McKay, whether it's you know, the student body itself, technology, the expectations that students, parents, and faculty have today? What other sort of broad trends have you seen over time?
Well, I think one of the things we've had to do is invest in our infrastructure. And what I mean by that is our facilities and so forth. I think a little-known fact, possibly to some of your listeners, is that the university system needs to generate approximately 90-plus percent of our revenue each and every year. And what do I mean by that? I mean that about 68-69% of our revenue comes from students in one manner or another when they pay tuition, fees, room, and board. We also secure another 20-plus percent in sponsored program activity. So no one, we're not entitled to these students, or no student is required to come to institutions. So we need to engage in practices that ensure individuals want to come to our institutions, or in the case of sponsored programs, that we have the quality and proposals from our faculty and staff.
So has it gotten more competitive? Is that what you're saying?
Right. So we've had to invest to make sure we're competitive. And the way you do that is you have to have facilities that are competitive, but you also have to have faculty and staff that are competitive. So what my focus has been is how can we ensure the quality's there that we can continue to be a talent magnet, if you will, for the state of New Hampshire, help sustain the state's economy and contribute in many ways, because that's going to be the key to the future success. And I know we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, because as you try to become that talent magnet and as you try to have state-of-the-art facilities, it also bumps up the cost, and that's definitely a big change that we'll talk about. What about technology, though, Chancellor McKay? I'm not trying to make you feel old here, but when you started in your career, nobody had personal computers at their desks, and the internet was long from being born.
Right. No, I actually, Laura, I remember when we had our first fax machine installed, and the turnaround time on reports you had to sign was probably about 1980, and that greatly increased the turnaround time. But there's no question; everyone expects instant access now. We have right now at Granite State College, for example, that 50% of their credits are earned on purely online, another 30% or so through hybrid courses. And our communications, whether it's all email, text, so forth, electronic documents, and our service commitment to our students then has to extend 24/7. We can't think of ourselves in the traditional residential semester patterns. So it really has fundamentally changed the nature of our work. And we've seen that through the type of financial and human resource systems we put in place in decentralizing authority approval process by way maintaining core backroom operations. So many, many changes in terms of that delivery. I think as we talk about challenges going forward, we'll need to continue to work how we can change that classroom experience. And I know we'll have time later to address that.
All right. Well, our phone number for you to join our conversation with Chancellor Ed McKay, Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire, is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. If you have questions or comments, praise or criticism about our state's public colleges and universities, it's your chance to talk with Chancellor Ed McKay a couple days before he steps down. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Chancellor McKay, we're dancing around it, so let's tackle it right off the top, the cost issue. President Obama said recently in his State of the Union address that higher education really needs to work harder to keep that college degree affordable for average Americans, and that he was going to try to start tying some federal aid to affordability and what he called value. Is that a big deal? It sounds like a big deal to me. What do you think?
It's a very big deal. I think that's the fundamental issue facing higher education today is the question of value proposition. And I think we clearly have a strong case on the value added of a bachelor's degree. For example, a 2011 study from Georgetown indicated the average individual that earns a bachelor's degree will earn nearly $1 million more than an individual with a high school diploma. Now, obviously, that does not mean each and every individual that has a bachelor's degree will have that same experience. But even today, with our higher unemployment rates, the unemployment rate for an individual with a bachelor's degree is less than half that of the general population. So as a generality, there's still a great return on investment. But we have to be extraordinarily concerned about price, and I don't want to minimize that at all. I care deeply about that and the accumulating debt. One of the things that's important to emphasize is the distinction between price and cost. And I I think the university system has a right to be proud of its record on cost. And what I mean by that is if you look at our average cost to educate a student, it's 16 to 27% less than comparable institutions. In other words, we compare Keene State College to its peers and Plymouth State University and University of New Hampshire. So we spend substantially less than comparable institutions, and we spend a higher proportion of that spending on instruction and a much lower percentage on what's called administrative overhead. So I think we're doing the right thing on the cost side, but it's a continuous process and we're committed to it. But the issue in New Hampshire has been price, and as your listeners know, we've received a substantial reduction in the subsidy for that price that's provided by the state of New Hampshire. When our appropriation was reduced at the beginning of this biennium, it took us back to the level of funding we received in 1988, a quarter of a century ago. And if you look at the charts, we've talked with different committees in the House about the average, the subsidy per New Hampshire student, the net subsidy, is less than $600. And so I think when we talk about affordability, we have to start there. What are the factors driving price and cost? Now, the end result, though, is because we have higher prices, students do have more debt. And again, the value proposition question, we still have the record that earnings exceed that, and it's a good payback. The figures I saw as an individual, by the time they're in their late 30s, they will earn $30,000 more per year than an individual with only a high school graduate, that's a bachelor's level versus high school.
So still making the case that it's still worth it, because there is a lot of doubt about that
these
days.
Right, but that's a one-year payback.
College grads having a hard time finding jobs, working in coffee shops, even though they've got degrees in, philosophy or architecture or whatever.
But there's been consistent studies indicating if we look forward, and especially in the state of New Hampshire, the demand for individuals with post-secondary education will exceed the demand for individuals with simply a high school degree by 70% over the next 7-8 years. So the demand will be there, but we have to make sure we provide the support to students. And we'll talk about some of those aid programs we put. I'd like to talk a little bit about the UNIQUE program, which is funded by the state 529 plan. Again, as individual efforts that we've made to try to assure that affordability is in place.
All right. Lots more to follow up on after a short break, including the state funding picture. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More of The Exchange coming up in a 10 on the 9 and Ream Show. What makes healthcare in the United States so expensive? New Hampshire weather, winter storm warning in effect for most of New Hampshire till Thursday morning. We have a winter weather advisory in the Merrimack Valley and Seacoast. For today, snow mixing with rain across southern New Hampshire, about 3 to 5 inches possible around Manchester to Nashua, with as little as a coating, 1 to 2 inches along the coast. Areas north and west of Concord, especially in higher terrain, it'll be mostly snow today, total accumulations from 6 to 12 inches. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Granite State Credit Union, providers of local residential and commercial mortgage and equity products with locations statewide, equal housing lender, gscu.org. And Cedarcrest Center for Children with Disabilities, enriching the lives of children with complex medical and developmental needs and supporting their families, cedarcrestcenter.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, University System of New Hampshire Chancellor Ed McKay. After more than 3 decades in public higher education in the state, he's stepping down as chancellor this week. We've been talking to him about some of the issues that he's worked on over the years, the trends he's seen, the challenges during his term as chancellor. Later on, we'll look at what challenges may await his successor. Right now, let's hear from you, though. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. What questions do you have? What comments do you have about the state of public higher education in New Hampshire? What praise do you have for the system? What criticism do you have for how our state's colleges and universities are run? Chancellor Ed McKay is here, and we're taking your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Chancellor McKay, before the break, we were starting to get into the budgetary issues that you dealt with as chancellor. You stepped into the chancellor's office in 2009, and very shortly thereafter, the university system received an unprecedented cut of almost half of its state funding. What was your reaction back then when you first heard this news? And then I've got a bunch more questions for you.
I was extremely disappointed because I thought elected officials, who I know were facing very difficult decisions because of the constraints on revenue, were not taking the longer view. And what I've talked to a number of people about since that time is that we need to find mechanisms so that individuals look beyond the two-year period, and I've described as lurching from two-year period to two-year period. What, for example, I'm a member of the Business and Industry Association board, and we had a terrific retreat last fall, and we talked a lot about that. And the BIA is supporting the development of a strategic economic plan that will do that. We'll look at the components needed to make sure there's a vibrant economy that enables the residents of the states to have a very productive life and sustain the quality of our life. So I'm pleased that group, also Fred Coker and Tom Raffio, have been involved in a roundtable type group that would secure business support.
That's the head of the Software Association and the head of Delta Dental.
Right. Yes, that's right. And they're looking. So others are looking at what can we do as a community, a statewide community, to put in place the kinds of concepts and ideas and principles that we want to sustain, again, the quality of life in this state. I think the Center for Public Policy study last fall, essentially it was a short version, is from tailwind to headwinds, really summarized it nicely and said the state really has to make critical investments in our infrastructure now if we're going to continue to be a state that attracts individuals. We've had net domestic out-migration the last 3 years. We've had an alarming increase in the rate, unemployment rate. So we really do need to be proactive, and that's why I was pleased with the governor's budget proposal.
But 2 years ago when this cut happened, it was unprecedented budgetary time. So did you feel like the legislature was picking on the university system in particular, or was it because, again, it was just unprecedented budget pressures on New Hampshire?
I think the budget pressures were clearly the driver. And I think, candidly, some elected officials believed that we had the better capacity to absorb those cuts than other entities. And what I mean by that is they realized that we had the ability to raise tuition, and we had the ability, and because of our record with cost control and so forth and a reputation for quality, that we could still attract students. Now, I'm extraordinarily proud of the way we responded to that situation by offsetting 80% of that cut with of reduction in appropriation with deferred spending, separation incentive plans, reducing staff, and so forth. So the only about 20% of that appropriation cut fell back on in-state students to pick up as additional tuition increases. So I think we responded very well, but I think going forward we have to look at what Governor Hassan has done, and she delivered on her promise to the people of New Hampshire to start making investments that would enable the state to take the longer view and say, what are we going to do as a state in order to continue to attract businesses to the state and enable them to grow here in New Hampshire?
Well, and I have a lot more questions on this budgetary issue, but let's go to our listeners, if we could, Chancellor McKay. Our number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And from Newmarket, Minta is calling. Hi, Minta, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling. I'm a former student of Keene State College. And basically, I wanted to bring up the fact that I know a lot of students that I was with ended up being five-year seniors, and that really affected the amount of debt that they had. And I was wondering what thoughts you had on that.
You're absolutely right, Minta. That's a serious problem. And I know I've talked with the presidents about that. One of the areas of which we're really looking to use Granite State College's capacity in particular is to enable individuals that are within a course or two of graduation after 4 years to be able to pick up those courses either through courses that are developed on the home campus, if you will, or through Granite State College.
Can I just jump in for a second? Yeah. What does that mean, a five-year senior?
It's taking 5 years to graduate or 6 years to graduate rather than 4 4 years. And in fact, I know we'll talk about the future, but I believe we'll see much more commonly 3-year degrees that will work with recognition of courses taken prior to enrollment in our institution, granting credit for that, whether that's at a high school or learned through prior other experiences, and really help students get through in 3 years. We've made enormous progress in the better use of our facilities on a 12-month basis. The University of New Hampshire started what they call the J term or January term just 3 years ago, and 80% of those credits are now earned online. So, Minta, back to your point, we're trying to put mechanisms in place so students can earn credits year-round and not necessarily have to be physically present on our campus to do so, and therefore ensure that they graduate in a more timely fashion, which translates, as you suggest, to less debt.
Yeah, no, is it necessarily a bad thing to be a 5-year senior? Maybe you're doing it because you're working. Maybe you're doing it because you've got outside interests.
And 70% of our students work substantially. About half that number work what would be considered full-time. So I realize students are doing a lot. But when you look at the cost of incurring that debt, I think it's in the country's best interest to ensure students can get through their programs in a timely fashion. And that's, again, why we have to be more responsive with these online programs. And we've made enormous progress in doing so.
Do you lose something, Chancellor McKay, with online education? You know, the experience of discussing things with your classmates, the experience of that face-to-face time with your professors and the other folks in the class?
I think you have to be very thoughtful about online education. And that's why Granite State College is a leader in this arena, because of the mechanisms they set up to ensure there is that interaction. Our more popular model in some ways is the hybrid, where we convene classes for face-to-face discussions several times a semester or a term, as it may be, but the bulk of the work is done online. Another mechanism that I think we've put in place that enhances the classroom experience is what our commonly called flipped classrooms, where students are expected to do a lot of their reading and content obtained outside the classroom and use the actual class time experience to engage in meaningful, high-impact learning experiences. But you're right, Laura, there's a lot of study going on now on learning assessments with regard to online education, and we need to be able to ensure the public that the students are receiving a meaningful learning experience as a result of that course.
Minta, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck to you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So just updating the budget situation then. As we talked about, you sustained a 50% cut in the last session. Maggie Hassan campaigned for governor largely or often on a promise to restore the funding. Now she says she'll do it if you folks freeze tuition. And as I understand, the university system has agreed to do that.
Absolutely. Given the governor's budget recommendation, $75 million in fiscal year 14, $90 million in fiscal year 15, which will take us back up, by the way, at $90 million to 90% of what we received in 2009.
So it was $100 million.
It was $100 million back in 2009. So we're still a long way there. But what we will do with that, and very significantly, not only freeze tuition, but substantially increase financial aid for students, both on a need and merit based. And this is really important. First, on the need base, obviously, to reduce that amount of debt that students are accumulating, but on the merit base, because we want our best and brightest in New Hampshire to be able to come to our institutions. Now, the state of New Hampshire loses a high percentage of its high school graduates to out-of-state institutions, about 48%. So we want to attract a higher proportion of that cohort each and every year. And these merit awards in particular will enable us to do so.
I want to ask you just one more question about the freeze, sort of the exchange for getting your funding back for a tuition freeze and more outreach to New Hampshire students. Union leader offered an opinion on this trade-off, Chancellor McKay, saying, and I'm quoting here, "The proposal is laughable. If the system could freeze tuition and increase financial aid with the same state appropriation it had in 2010, why didn't it do it then?" What do you think about that?
Well, I think I was looking at the listening to the other portion of it. I'm not sure I have, but what we did not freeze tuition with the same appropriation. What we're looking at is the continuing costs that will increase over the next 2 years, and by the very substantial increases in financial aid that would be provided as part of the governor's budget, we will actually reduce the net cost of attendance for students, and again enable our most talented New Hampshire residents to stay in state. And if you take the longer view, what are we doing as a state to proactively try to enhance the economic environment in the state? This is exactly the type of thing we ought to do. And the sticker price is important, as you mentioned in your introductory remarks. I'm first generation, but 45% of our students are first generation students. The sticker price is an effective barrier to those families because they don't have the personal experiences of going to college, incurring some debt, being able to pay it back. So they're reluctant to incur that debt. So price is important, and that's why we have to be very conscious about these efforts to do so. Again, if you go back to how we responded to the reductions, we did not pass those increases on to in-state students. Only 20% of the appropriation cut was passed on to in-state students. The other 80% was offset through spending reductions and deferrals.
So is it a fair point, Chancellor McKay, or not, that, you know, gee, you had $100 million 2 years ago, then you got cut, now you might get $100 million back. Why couldn't you have done it under the old regime, so to speak, when you had that full $100 million? Is it a fair critique or not?
No, what we've put in place, we've used this two-year period to put in place a number of changes, including reductions.
I see, during that time.
During the two-year period. And what we've done in many cases, unfortunately, is have to defer needed investments. And we went through a thing called separation incentive plans. We allowed employees to take early retirement or terminate for some reason. So those things take time to work through. And again, the governor's proposal is not for full restoration. We're extraordinarily appreciative. It takes us to $75 million and then $90 million, not the $100 million that we had previously.
All right. Lots of questions from our audience, Chancellor McKay. Again, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And to Anthony in Lee. Hi, Anthony. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I was wondering, I'm a student over at Granite State, and I've taken classes online and in person, and the cost is the same for them. I was wondering why there wasn't a lower cost for online classes, but it seems like there'd be less overhead.
Yeah, Anthony, thanks for the question. Go ahead, Chancellor McKay.
Down the road, Anthony, there may be potential for different pricing, but at this point in time, the scale is not there yet. And moreover, we are focused on making sure we deliver quality in terms of the support mechanisms for you in that online course. So, again, I would like to hear about your experiences in that course, but the feedback that I've heard from individuals is the faculty are extraordinarily responsive to 24/7 to questions, engage in a lot of interaction with the students, and really have it a very meaningful learning opportunity. As you look at, and I know there's discussions of massive open online courses, and we may get to MOOCs and other kinds of things, scalability is an issue in how to sustain the quality of that experience. But at our current levels of scale, we're still enrolling relatively modest numbers of students in these online courses. I don't know the specific number in your course, but my guess is it's probably around 20 students. So that doesn't allow for the discounting of tuition at that scale.
Well, but isn't the idea of online to reduce costs? That's how it's sold anyway to the public.
I think eventually the potential is there, but at this point we're focused on the quality of that program. And once we have better learning experiences and how the mechanisms, the software, and the other ways we can enhance that experience for a student as it scales up, and peer-to-peer review and the other kinds of mechanisms that are being tested in the field now, I think we can do that, and that will be an opportunity to do so. But at this point in time, we're responsible for ensuring to the public. We're your consumer protection agent. We take that responsibility very seriously to make sure that the experiences we're offering are of a high enough quality that it warrants the granting of those credits.
Well, Anthony, thanks for the call. Good question. And our number again for you to join us with your questions, comments, critiques, or praise for the university system here in New Hampshire is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from David in Henniker, Chancellor McKay, which touches on something you mentioned earlier. Can you speak to the number of New Hampshire kids who are first-generation college students from their families and how the University of New Hampshire system focuses on this group of kids?
Thank you, David, for that question. When I went to the university system central offices. I had a great opportunity to get to know Gene Savage, who was our really ambassador in many ways. And I think, Laura, I mentioned this to our board a few weeks ago, that I think one of the tragedies in the last 2 years is we've lost individuals such as Walter Peterson, Gene Savage, and John Crozier, who were real spokespersons for the value of higher education and advocates for that. And I hope that others emerge that they can take the flag, if you will, to lead on the value of that. And what each of those individuals talked about in particular is the need to provide affordable access for these first-generation students. When Gene and I had an idea, why don't we go around and visit with high school counselors around the state, we used to take this fall tour. So for the last 20 years, I've went with the directors of our directors of admissions at our institutions, and we've met with counselors at three or four locations. And what we've listened to in those conversations, that what's meaningful to their graduating classes, their seniors, their students in high school, and so much of it has been about how can the university system be responsive to our needs. And that's why Granite State College is the relationships you talk with the community college system, knocking down those barriers. But we also had a commitment which for decades put in place called Meeting All Need, which we've had to suspend 3 years ago. But basically what that meant, Laura, is that it takes into account the student's expected family contribution, the standard loans or grants that may be available to that student, and the normal expectation for college work, for example. And the gap between that and the price of attendance that we would fill with institutional grants, not loans, but grants.
So you don't have to pay that back.
You don't have
to
pay that
back. Doesn't add up to your debt.
And so with the Great Recession and the escalation of those needs, also and the state reducing its commitment to financial aid, eliminating its aid programs and so forth. In the last 3 years, we've no longer been able to keep that commitment.
That program's gone.
And that program's gone. But I'll tell you what it had resulted in. And this is a statistic, again, that I think many of your listeners probably wouldn't know. New Hampshire has the highest college-going rate of individuals that qualify for free or reduced lunch in the country by a substantial portion. In the most recent data I've seen, 56% of individuals that qualify for free or reduced lunch go on to college in New Hampshire.
So that means children from low-income families are getting more higher education here than in other
states. Any other state. The next highest, I think, is New Jersey at 50%.
Okay, that's shocking to me because the cost of higher ed here in New Hampshire is so much more expensive than
in
most states.
I think that's why David's point's a good one. How have you been able to communicate that you can go to our institutions? And I think it's 20 years of road tours and talking about meeting all need and talking with those counselors and saying, let us work with you. Let's find a way to make it happen, because price has not been a barrier.
Well, David, thanks a lot for that email. And I've got a couple more emails to share with you after a break. Chancellor McKay, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Grapponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Grapponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at grapponi.com. And the Business and Industry Association, publisher of the Blue Book, New Hampshire's comprehensive guide to government and politics, available now at nhbluebook.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
By now, you know you can donate your old car to NHPR. And you know how easy we make it by filling out the paperwork for you, picking up the car, and auctioning it off. But what you may not realize is that we accept more than just cars. You can donate anything to our vehicle donation program, from a snowmobile to an RV to a boat. Find out more at nhpr.org or give us a call and get the process started at 1-877-393-NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Al-Qaeda's expansion into Africa. How this has happened and what may be at stake for the U.S. Email us your questions before the show at nhpr.org, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange is a conversation with retiring University System of New Hampshire Chancellor Ed McKay. We're looking at the many changes he's seen over his more than three decades in public higher education here in New Hampshire. And we're taking your questions and comments about how our public colleges and universities are run. Your praise is welcome. Your criticism is welcome. Your questions are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And a couple more emails I want to share with you, Chancellor McKay, and then back to the phones. Here's one from Jeannie, who says, does your guest know whether the casino that Governor Hassan supports is supposed to bring revenue for our education system? If so, how does he feel about that? It's a great question, Jeannie.
Jeannie, the position of the university system is that we won't advocate for any particular source of revenue, whether it's a cigarette tax, beer tax, income tax, sales tax, or gaming in this case. The official position of the university system is that we cannot be advocates for that. What we will argue for is the value of the investment in higher education and why that makes a difference. So with the elected officials consider the options they have, that they evaluate what they need to accomplish or wish to accomplish as elected officials in terms of moving the state forward, and then assessing what's the most reasonable way to obtain the revenue necessary to meet those commitments or those aspirations. So I'm hopeful that as that the dialogue continues, that all factors will be taken into consideration in evaluating that option.
So you're not allowed to say, I think this is a good idea or not.
Right. And that's our official position. We will not take a position on revenue generation. We'll take a position on the value of the investment.
Well, Jeannie, thank you for the question. And let's go back to our callers, Chancellor McKay. Tom's waiting in where? Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I just think I have a comment here. I have three daughters. My second one went to UNH. She graduated 2 years ago when the tuition was around $18,000 a year. A year later, it goes up to in the neighborhood of $27,000 a year. My youngest daughter applied to UNH as well as a number of out-of-state schools. She got accepted to out-of-state schools for either equal tuition or less tuition than the in-state tuition is for the state of New Hampshire.
Wow, Tom.
She has decided not to go to UNH for that reason. UNH offered no scholarships. In fact, she'll be going to University of Southern Maine for about $7,000 a year less than it costs to go to UNH. And my comment is, New Hampshire is considered to be, by many, an aging state. And now you have the young people coming up out of high schools looking for colleges, and they're finding out that the UNH system is not affordable. And they're moving out of state to go to college. And many students who move out of state to go to college end up staying out of state.
Wow.
And I don't see how raising the tuition the way they have does anything for the future of the state of New Hampshire.
Well, Tom, thank you for calling in. I know that's the kind of story you hate to hear, Chancellor McKay, but Governor Hassan had a story like that in her budget address, talking about a mom she talked to whose daughter went to, I believe, UMass Lowell again for less money. Geez, what do you do about that?
Well, I think it's important to just clarify some of the facts, and I appreciate Tom's comments. At the University of New Hampshire, the total price of attendance, and that's tuition, fees, room, and board, is a little less than $27,000 this year. At Keenan Plymouth, that's about $21,000 to $22,000, and it would essentially be the same except for minor adjustments in room and board rates next year. Now, that may be pricey for an in-state student, but I think if you compare it, for example, to the total price of attendance at private institutions in New Hampshire is fairly typical, it's about $45,000. So the sticker price is substantially different as a generality for private institutions. Now, it is the amount of tuition, again, that's the amount that's subsidized by the state, is also fairly high. It's $13,670 at UNH and $10,000 or so. So that's the amount of the price of tuition. And at Granite State College, tuition is about $9,000 a year. It's based on a per credit hour charge. So there are more affordable options. But Tom's right. It goes back to the key issue. We haven't had the funds to provide any aid other than basic need-based aid. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we've had to now gap in-state students and not even meet all need for students with substantial need. That's why the governor's proposal was so important. We'll be able to restore many of those need-based programs and be able to go further and provide merit-based aids. We know we want to be competitive with the pricing of out-of-state institutions, and we know that a lot of them are heavily discounting that price. So we share that concern. And again, what drives price? You go back to the underlying cost issues. I think we've been responsible, and we're committed to continue to do more. It's a complex problem, but we're committed to solving it.
Well, Tom, thanks a lot for calling in, and good luck to your daughter. Here's an email from Shay, who says, What are your thoughts on UNH Law joining the university system? This is interesting to me personally because I live right around that neighborhood.
It's spectacular success for the state, for what was formerly Franklin Pierce, and for the University of New Hampshire. They're engaged in a number of collaborative projects that will fully integrate the UNH School of Law over the next year with the University of New Hampshire. And again, looking at the value of that in terms of helping the state commercialize intellectual property and the various partnerships and new degree programs, it's a real win for the state.
All right, and let's go back to our callers. And another caller from where? Kathy is calling from there. Hi, Kathy, go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I happen to be disabled, but instead of sitting at home, I wanted to try to get retrained, and so I tried to take one class through UNH. That was $2,000 for the class, which is 2 months of my disability pay, which I still have to pay my rent and everything. And then the gas was very expensive, and on top of that, they wanted me to pay $50 to park, and they had no handicap parking available in those lots. And when I tried to not pay the $50 because I couldn't afford it, I tried to pay, and I tried to park in the handicapped parking spot at the visitor's lot. That was the closest to my class. I got a ticket for $50.
Oh, no.
So my comment is, for those of us that are handicapped that would like to get back out into the working world, it's very, very hard to afford to go to UNH.
Yeah, lots of barriers there. You're talking about UNH Durham there, Kathy, or UNH Manchester?
Yeah.
UNH Durham.
Well, UNH Durham, a lot of their animal programs, you have to go to Durham. They don't have them in Manchester.
Okay.
So, yeah, I had to drive all the way to Durham.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Kathy. Yeah,
Kathy, I'm disappointed to hear that. I've been on all our campuses many times. I know there are many spots reserved for handicap parking. I'm glad to follow up as a result of this call to make sure that we are providing access. I think our institutions have a good track record. Keene State College in particular has been recognized by several statewide organizations for its commitment to serving disabled students and really has a tremendous support structure there. But again, thank you for your call. It's a serious issue, and we'll make sure we look at it.
Yeah, not just the physical access, but she was saying once again, Chancellor McKay, that financial access is an issue.
And it's true, there's limited financial aid for students not going full-time. They're not eligible for Pell Grants and so forth.
I see. So if you want to, you know, jump in, improve your skills, take some courses, but not go for that full-fledged degree,
there's
it's
limitations
harder to do
on eligibility in terms of the governmental. And again, there are no programs available in the state of New Hampshire. We believe that's the only state in the country that does not have any state grant programs. And the federal grants have restrictions around them. So we're left with institutional aid. And I hope we can do much more as a result of the upcoming biennium.
You have to save that more for the full-time students? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. In the case of currently, we just have such a demand for that aid already that we tend to apply it to full-time students. There are very limited aid programs available for part-time students. But as you look down the road, and I know one of the things the President and I have been talking about is how can we encourage more students to enroll on a part-time basis or use the January terms, the winter and summer sessions, and so forth. So there may be more aid available because the point Kathy makes is that if you go to a winter or a summer session, that's not necessarily covered by Pell Grant guidelines, for example.
All right. Well, Kathy, thank you for joining us. And our next caller is Dick in Dublin. Hi, Dick. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura. This is Dick Over. I'm the president of the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. I just wanted to call first to congratulate the chancellor on a terrific tenure with the system over these many years, and congratulations on your retirement, Chancellor.
Thank you, Dick.
A point about support for student aid. Our foundation, thanks to our donors and our student aid team, is currently the largest source of generally available student aid for New Hampshire students. And we're delighted to do this work as a philanthropic foundation. But I wonder, Chancellor, if you could go a little bit more into the current status of the UNIQ program, where it started, where it is now, because when that program was reduced a couple of years ago, the state essentially stopped doing a, it's part of the scholarship program, which was a terrific match and a leverage for the work that we do with private charitable dollars.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dick, for the call. You mentioned this earlier, but go ahead. This is the UNIQUE scholarship program. Right. UNIQUE is an acronym for something.
Right. Well, it's actually not an acronym. It's just the name we applied to.
But okay.
1997, Governor Shaheen signed legislation which enabled the state of New Hampshire to become one of the first states to set up what's called a 529 plan, and many of your listeners are familiar with that. It's a federal program where states can sponsor programs that you can invest in dollars for a beneficiary and have that those dollars earned then tax-free and be withdrawn if you use them for college purposes tax-free. New Hampshire was very aggressive and leading in this initiative. I think, depending on who you talk to, either the first or second state to offer such a program. Fidelity is our partner in that, and as part of our initial contract with Fidelity, they agreed to make the program, which we titled the UNIQUE program, their national program. So now we have over $11 billion invested in that program.
Billion with a B.
A billion with
wow.
a B. And over 96% of that money is held by non-New Hampshire residents. And we get a small charge associated with that, a small fee, a couple basis points, and that's enabled the state to collect 529 fees. What we did when we set up that plan, and I happen to be fortunate enough to be on the original group, and Sylvia Larson, the senator from Concord, was the chair for about the first 7 or 8 years. I've been the chair since. We've really committed to using those dollars in a manner that supports New Hampshire residents with need. And it's the only state in the country, based on the feedback we have from Fidelity, that does so. So after you take off the required audit fees, essentially all the dollars had either been distributed in 1 year for annual awards, and depending on students with low financial means, or to create restricted endowments on the campuses where the payout is restricted to students with need. The last time we had the program fully in place before the state had a diverse the funds, we had 5,900 New Hampshire residents receiving grants. That's the scope of the program we hope to put in place over the next 2 years. Back in place.
Dick, thanks a lot for the call. And let's take another one if we could, Chancellor McKay. This is Harold in Webster. Hi, Harold. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, Ed. I have no questions. I just want to compliment Ed on an extraordinary turn over the years. I served in the Senate for a couple of terms, and I also served on the 529 board, so I saw him at work under varying conditions, often difficult, and he always, as you've heard this morning, explained things so clearly and so well and in such a positive way that even though the outcome was not always positive, particularly in the last few years, he never lost it, and I just can't say enough about his contribution. So thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Harold.
All right. Harold, thank you very much for calling in. Nice to hear that since you're stepping down in just a couple of days. Yeah. Here's one last email, if I could share it with you, Chancellor McKay. This is from Mary Lou in Peterborough. She works at a high school, so she's got, you know, an interest in higher education, seeing her students go on to higher ed. Please ask your guest to cite his source for job availability prospects for bachelor degree grads. Seems to be at odds with Harvard's 2011 Pathways to Prosperity report that says only 36% of jobs require 4+ years of college. According to Harvard's research, we are overselling the value of a 4-year degree. 2/3 of students, Mary Lou says, would be better served by learning to be career-ready while in high school and another post-secondary certificate and 2-year programs. While higher education can be valuable, she says it is not the only pathway to prosperity, especially in New Hampshire with its higher student debt. And Mary Lou, thank you for that email. And I think we even did a show on that Pathways to Prosperity report showing that we might be overselling this 4-year degree. What do you think?
Well, Mary Lou is correct that when I said before that it requires that 2/3 of the jobs by 2018 will require a post-secondary education, I didn't mean exclusively 4-year degrees. It is true that about half that demand will come before individuals with a 2-year degree. So I'm including the community colleges and their efforts in there. We have to think about the preparation to prepare students not only for their initial job, but for a lifelong learning of jobs and providing the skill set to adapt. We now know that individuals are likely to change jobs. And this figure I heard the other day, 10 to 12 to 14 times. Not when, Laura, when I, you know, the expectation was 3-4 times maybe at most, maybe for you 5 or 7 times being younger. But this is remarkable. So it's preparing an individual for a lifelong of series of changes. And I think the bachelor's degree, the liberal arts studies, and along with, of course, the focus to help in that immediate job with the STEM, which do have professions that pay much higher than some of the liberal arts, are really worthwhile investments and will be over the longer term. You can't measure it strictly by the initial compensation.
And STEM is science, technology, engineering, manufacturing, right? Well, a couple of last questions for you, Chancellor McKay, and I can't believe our time has run out and that you're not going to be chancellor anymore in a couple of days. You're a first-generation college student, meaning your parents or grandparents hadn't gone to college. We heard, got an email earlier from someone asking about first-generation college students. What does that mean to you, Chancellor McKay, and your parents to get that college degree?
Well, my parents graduated high school in the Depression. Both had partial scholarships to college, but neither could go. They came from big families, 5 and 10 respectively. So they really felt it was important that I had that opportunity. They provided that opportunity to me. I worked through college, and I had minor loans, NDSL loans, which I was able to repay fairly quickly. I think that experience and that, and the same is true also for my wife, by the way, that really has driven me to ensure that the next generation and the next generation are provided those same opportunities. And for individuals that have worked with me over the course of my time at the university system, know I've often spoken to this issue of providing assistance and aid and encouragement to first generation students. They are our future, Laura. If you look at the state of New Hampshire, the pipeline of high school graduates, it's declining, and the socioeconomic profile of the individuals in that pipeline is substantially different than it was a few years ago. As I'm mentioning before, eligibility for reduced and free lunch has doubled in the last 20 years in New Hampshire alone. And if you look more broadly across the region and the country, this is certainly the case. So my commitment has been, what do we need to do as a state and as an institution first, as a state, as a country, to really provide those future opportunities for the residents that will carry us all through, as you say, my old age and retirement?
Well, congratulations on that retirement. And, boy, sleep in late on Monday. Friday's your last day. Thanks for coming in and talking with us, Chancellor
McKay. It's been a real
McKay.
Pleasure, and thank you, Laura, for the service you provide through the Exchange. It's a wonderful program.
Ed McKay, again, Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire, stepping down at the end of this week. He's worked in public higher education in New Hampshire for more than 3.5 decades. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.